This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this series of hearings. Some of you took part in an informal series that I gave a few months ago based on the Nefesh HaChaim, and I'll tell you a little bit about it. The Nefesh HaChaim is a small book with enormous density of content written by Rav Chaim Volozhiner. Can you hear me at the back? I've got a bit of a sore throat. I'll try and shout a little louder. Just wave if you can't hear me. It was written by Rav Chaim Volozhiner, who was the most outstanding student of the Vilna Gaon. So this goes back to the end of the 18th century, early 19th century. And it was written in a way as a response to the Hasidic movement, which had begun to gain a lot of force, but not in Lithuania. Interestingly, that the Hasidic movement was never an important force in Lithuania, and some attribute the reason for that to the Vilna Gaon, who actually waged a mighty battle against Hasidus. He did not approve of it at all. He was very concerned about it, but that's not really so. Rabbi Hill Weinberg has an amazing analysis of the social trends and the academic trends in learning and in Torah of that period of time, and shows how Hasidus was just not indigenous to the Lithuanian soul. It was just the Lithuanians, the Litvaks, just didn't go for it. Chabad is a little different, but even Chabad was relatively small and never really took on. However, what the Chaim Volozhiner did recognize was that there was a need to address some of the areas that Hasidus was addressing and that were neglected in other parts of Jewish learning, particularly the interface between the Kabbalah, between the Kabbalistic part of the Torah, and the more halachic, the more rational part of the Torah. And the purpose of the Nefesh HaChaim is to provide us with whatever insights, whatever Kabbalistic insights we need in order to live a correct Torah life. And that really is the purpose of the book. He brings a Kabbalistic view that you don't have to be a Kabbalist, you don't have to be a Makubil to understand it, but it brings Kabbalistic concepts into Jewish life, and that really is it. This is our book of Kabbalah. This is our mystical textbook. Apart from if one really gets into the higher reaches of Kabbalah, of course, then there are a whole lot of books, but for the ordinary person, the Nefesh HaChaim provides all the insights we need into Kabbalah in order to live a good Jewish life. And the section we're going to do is the Shaar Bet. It's the second section. The first section, we did a fair amount of the first section in that earlier series. And the second section starts with issues around prayer and brachas. And we're going to go through it inside. Those of you who are comfortable with reading Hebrew will not have a problem. And those of you who are not will not miss anything, because we'll translate everything as we go through it. So the first parak of Shaar Beis, the Nefesh HaChaim says the following. See, it says in the Torah, in the second paragraph of the Shema, so we say this twice a day. Li'ahavo et Hashem Elokeichem, that we're obligated to love the Ribbono Shel Olam, to love Hashem, Ula Ovdo b'chol levavchem u'b'chol nafshechem, and to serve God with all your heart and with all your soul. Now, those of you who know the Shema of Bahas will be able to look it up. It wouldn't be a bad idea if there are any Sidurim available. It wouldn't be, it would be good for you, more important than for me, in fact, to have Sidurim. To actually look at the comparison between that verse as it appears and the way a similar verse appears in the first paragraph, because there's some interesting differences. What is the wording in the first paragraph of the Shema? That's the first paragraph. The first statement of the Shema is, you shall love Hashem. Oh, that's great. Thank you. What page is it on in the Siddur? 93. There we are. So in the first paragraph of the Shema, we're told, you shall love Hashem with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. What does that mean? How do you love God with all your heart? Mean, what does it mean with all your heart? To love God with all your heart? How do you understand that? When you say it every morning and every evening, what do you think it means? You shall love Hashem with all your heart. What is that? How are you mekayim that mitzvah? How do you fulfill that mitzvah? Sorry? Give your life is the next one. Bechol nafshechem is giving your life. What is bechol levavcha? Feeling. And what does it mean, bechol levavcha? Meaning what? That there's nothing else that you love. Okay? That doesn't mean that there's nothing else that you love at all, but everything else is a subset of your love of God. Why do you love people? Because people are divine. Why do you love animals or the world? Because God created them. And there's something of God in you. So love is the connection of two people. What connects me to you? Our common soul. That's what connects. If we weren't both created by God with something divine, there would be no love between people. So when people love each other, the two souls, they talk about soulmates. What is a soulmate? It's at the point of soul that we create connection. If the connection isn't just physical or isn't just expedient, that's something else. But if it's really love, it's at the point of soul. So that's part of loving God. That's the chol levavcha. So you realize that all your heart is around the love of God. There is no other love. That everything and everyone you love is part of your love of God. And nothing comes before your love of God. Nothing is a bigger love. Nothing is a more intense love than the Ahavat Hashem. And we see that that's the whole theme of Shir HaShirim, where Shlomo HaMelech compares the love of the Jewish people to God, to the romantic love between a man and a woman. Because that's the level of love. There needs to be a passion, an intimacy, and an intensity of that love between man and God. That's Ba'ahavta Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha. Or b'chol nafshecha means even if you have to give your life. Isn't that the ultimate test of love? Would a mother give her life to save her children? Yes, she would. That's part of motherhood. That's part of the love of a mother for her children. That's the ultimate test of love, willingness to give your life. Uvechol mo'odecho and all your money. You'll find parents who will give their lives to save their children. But their money. Let them make their own money. And sometimes you'll find parents trying to justify not giving their kids a proper education, a proper Torah education. You can't afford it, and this and that. And it's interesting how sometimes it's easier for us to give our lives than to give our money. And the Gemara says that there are some people who find parting with life easier than parting with money. And what's the reason for that? That's counterintuitive. Why would one do that? Because what? Yeah, but if you're willing to give your life, you're willing to die, then why would you not be willing to give money? Because when you give your life to some heroism, isn't there? He died for Torah. Wow. But sure, you give some more money to your kids, pay your school fees month after month. There's no heroism. Everybody's doing it. So there's no heroics attached to giving money for the Ribbono Shel Olam. But there's a heroics attached to giving one's life. So the Shema says, we remind ourselves twice a day, this is not about heroics. This is about love. And if it's love, then it makes no difference if it requires money or it requires your life or your energy or your effort, whatever it is. This is about love. That's what it is. Ve'ahavta Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha b'chol moedecha. What about the second paragraph? What does it say? Le'avu Hashem Elokechem u'lovdo b'chol levavchem b'chol nafshechem. Have you got that piece? What's the difference between that statement and the first statement? Firstly, he leaves out Moedech. There's no money in the second paragraph. Yes, the first one is how you love. The second one is how you serve. Not talking about the same thing at all. The first paragraph is Ve'ahavto. The mitzvah is you shall love. How shall you love? With all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And the second paragraph is how you serve. With all your heart and with all your soul. Not with all your might. So let's have a look now in the keep your Siddur handy and let's look at the Beit HaShafai. Ketiv, it says in the Torah, La'ahavo et Hashem Elokechem, to love Hashem, ule ovdo, and serve Him, b'chol levavchem and b'chol nafshichem. So b'chol levavchem and b'chol nafshichem qualifies ule ovdo, not le'ahava. It qualifies the service of God, not the love of God. The love of God is dealt with in the first paragraph. The Amru Razal, the Fere Kama the Tainis, and the Gemara says in the Sech the Tainis, for the Sifri, E Zohi Avoido Shebalev, what is service in the heart? How do you serve God with your heart? Serving God normally, you serve God with actions, with deeds. What is serving God with heart? That's referring to davening, that's referring to tefillah. The next paragraph, Hinei ha'ahavo she'omar she'tzricha li'yot v'chol leiv. The ahavo which the Torah says that has to be with all heart, who pushes, it's clear. Ki hi mimitzvah ha'tzricha li'yot v'chol. That you shall love with all your heart, that's clear, we understand that. Because love is a heart kind of thing. So it makes sense that when it comes to love, we're told you're going to do it with all your heart. And the idea of loving with all your soul is also the same thing. That means even to be most nefesh, to give your life. That's part of love. That's what love is. It's an emotional mitzvah. It has an emotional measure. To be willing to do that because of the enormity and power and passion of the love for God. As it says in the first parasha, so we understand that. Omnam, in the third paragraph of Menefesh HaChaim, the parasha zo, chidush hu shechidsha. But in the second paragraph of the Shema, there's a chidush. Chidush is an innovation, a new idea, a new concept. What's the new idea? Shegam ha'avoido, that also service, avoido, hi atfilo, which means tfilo. Tzricho liyos b'chol lev u'b'chol nefesh. It has to be with all hearts, and it has to be with all soul. And he says in the brackets in the next piece, that's why it doesn't say b'chol mo'edecho, because you don't have to give money to daven. Davening is one mitzvah, it doesn't cost anything. So it doesn't make sense to say b'chol mo'edecho. In the first paragraph, it's talking about the love of God. You've got to love God and spend all your money on it if you need to. The second paragraph is talking about davening. You don't have to spend money on davening. It doesn't cost anything. That's lev and nefesh, that is need. An investment of heart and an investment of soul, that it needs for them. We go to the next paragraph. V'hinei ma'ar, the bottom line of the page. V'hinei ma'ar sh'nei ma'ar b'chol levavchem al inyan ha'tfila. So what does it mean now? Rav Chaim Volozhner is going to explain. See, what's beautiful about the Nefesh HaChaim is it's a handbook. It's not just a philosophic discussion. It actually is a manual. It tells you how to do it. What does it mean? You shall love God, you shall serve God, you shall daven, in other words, you shall pray with all your heart. So that's quite easy to understand. The explanation of the verse in the Torah that obligates us to love God with all our heart and with all our soul is there are two dimensions to understanding this. The first one is Hainu lefanot libo mitirdat hamachshavot ulehatota el hakavana hashlema letivot atzila ulevav shalem umeum kedurim. That is, sympathy uses. To clear your mind of all worry and thought, or the worry of thoughts, and to tilt your mind into complete attention and direction, the tevot hatfila, to the words of the davening, the levav shalem, with a full heart, and from a place deep, deep down inside your heart. That's where you've got to daven from. Well, we'll see. We'll see if you have to understand. It helps to understand the words. But now with Oscar, it's easy. So, let's pause there. The truth is, we could spend the next three sessions, or however many we've got. I think we're going to meet next Sunday night. And not the following one, I think. I mean, no, it will be. The following one will be all right as well. I think I'll be back from Kesar. I think we've got four. I think there are four Sunday nights. I could very, very comfortably spend all of the four Sunday nights on the files we've got, just these three lines. Because in this, not only does Reb Chaim Volozhiner open up the gates of davening, but in these three lines, he writes what has been written in volumes and volumes and volumes about meditation. It's all here. All the art of meditation is here in these three lines. You don't need to know anything else. The rest is just technique. The rest is just how to do it. What does he say? Firstly, he says an amazing thing. You have to clear your mind or your heart of tirdat hamachshavot. What does tirda mean? Person's Torah. What is tirda? Distraction, worry, sorry? Anxiety is a great word. Anxieties, distractions, worry, tilde, of what? He doesn't say anxiety about your business, you must get out of your... Anxiety about family problems, doesn't say that. Anxiety about the crime level, doesn't say that. Anxiety about what? What causes anxiety? Thinking. The act of thinking causes anxiety. Does that mean we have to stop thinking? No, can't stop thinking. But not while we're davening. Davening is not a time for thinking. And that's the essence of meditation. You've got to stop the thinking. You can't practice meditation if you're thinking. Did anybody in this group go to Mr. Mandela's talks on meditation? Have they taken place already? Was anybody there? So did he teach techniques? Did he teach you how to do it? So the very first principle, I'm sure that he explained, the way that you've got to stop thinking. You've got to turn the mind off, because the mind makes such a noise that when the mind is working, you can't hear the heart. You can't hear the feeling. You can't hear intuition. You can't hear anything spiritual. The mind is a function of the ego. And thought and feelings are functions of self. And you can't hear what you're feeling if you're busy thinking. And davening is an avodo shebelev. This is heart work, not head work. The study of Torah is head work. Davening is heart work. They're two completely different exercises. And you can't do them both at the same time. You can do them both at the same time to a degree. You can use your heart while you're learning, when you get good at it. But you can't use your head in the davening. Because if you're using your head in the davening, there's too much noise. Doesn't mean what you're thinking about is bad. Very often when this is taught, it's taught as you've got to take out thoughts, distracting thoughts from your mind. That's what we normally thought. Don't think about the things that distract you from davening. But that's not what Reb Chaim Volozhiner says. What does he say? Don't think about anything when you're davening. This is not about thinking. This is about feeling. And you can't feel if you're thinking. So you've got to remove the distractions and anxieties of the thinking process. And then you've got to turn your heart El HaKavanah Shleimon LeTevot HaTfila. Now we use the words of the davening. When we use the words of the davening, in some ways it helps to understand the meaning of the davening, but in some ways it doesn't. Because if you understand the meaning, it's very easy to get back into thinking mode. The thing is, it's the ability to feel. It's very, very sad, I think, that the whole art and avoda, more than an art, of chazonus has become a little bit old-fashioned. Kind of the world is losing it. This is one of the last places. Well, there seems to be a bit of a revival in America. There seems to be a little bit of a revival, but more in concerts than in shuls, I think. But that is why. What is the whole thing? The old South African Jew used to go to shul on Friday night, or on Yom Tov, or Shon and Yom Kippur. What was the process? What was happening to him? He couldn't daven because he didn't know the words. He couldn't read. He didn't understand the words. So what did he do? Sat in shul and he heard the words. And his chazon was great. He felt the words. An amazing opportunity. Now it's not the frum thing to do. Now we go to shtivelach and we daven. And we get nothing out of it. We get the kiddush, the bracha afterwards. That's what it is. But in those days, people were inspired. People were amazingly inspired. And it doesn't have to be a choice of one or the other. And the only way of being inspired is not passively by a chazon. One can inspire oneself through the davening too. But one can be inspired by feeling the word. Music is one of the ways. That was the purpose of chazonus. To teach the ordinary person, to give them direct access to the soul of the tefillah, even though they didn't understand it. That was the purpose of chazonus. What about? What's that going to do? That will take you into a world of fantasy and illusion. You lose your thinking, yeah, but then you lose everything in the process. You replace one noise with another noise, that's all that. You replace one noise with another noise. The idea is to get rid of everything except your own soul. You get rid of your inhibitions that way. You can have a schnappel, so there are all sorts of ways to get rid of your thinking. You can shoot yourself and get rid of the thinking as well. This is too much other damage happens at the same time. So drugs is the same thing. You kill too much else. But that was the meaning of the purpose of chazonus. I remember Chazon Alter's grandfather, must be right, great from his grandfather, was before Yom Kippur. He used to learn through all the Mishnayos of what the Kohen Gadol used to do in the Beis Hamikdash. Every Yom Kippur he used to learn through. He used to learn it with my father very often, so that when he came to Yom Kippur, he was inspiring the people with what it really meant, with what was really going on. And I remember the little boy saying to my father when I saw them learning and I asked what's going on, and he said, Chazon Alter is preparing for Yom Kippur, he's learning the Avodah. He's learning the temple service because that's part of the Musaf service. I said to him, but who in the shul will know the difference? Whether Chazon Alter learned the Mishnayos or he didn't learn them, he'll notice the difference. And my father said, it's not for the people to notice the difference. It's him, for God. To be able to, for the great chazonim used to get what depth of feeling they could and be able to transmit that feeling in music even to somebody who doesn't understand the words. So today, it's not, we don't have that many chazonim, so, and that's not the style in many shuls today. So what's the alternative? It's still the same thing. The words have music. The davening is poetry. When you hear a beautiful poem, you have to be an Oxford graduate in English literature to be able to understand the poem. It helps that you are. You'll understand all sorts of additional things, but if you're just an ordinary human being and you hear the rhythm of the poem, and you hear the rhyme of the poem, and you see the imagery of the poem, and you can picture the imagery, it's a painting of words. It's a painting of a picture using words. If you can see that picture directly, you don't have to be a big name. And that's what poetry was written for, ordinary people. And the tefillah was written for ordinary people. The davening was written for ordinary people. And we'll look at examples of it, of how easy it is to do. When you stop thinking and you start visualizing. And you start feeling instead of analyzing. So what we've got to focus on is the words of the davening. And that's why we use a siddur. See the words. The words have artistic form. The Hebrew language is very beautifully written. The words, the form of the letters is very beautiful. You look at the letter, you look at the word. Again, in meditation, there's often a technique to focus on something. Either you focus on your breath, or you focus on an object, a candle, or you focus on a sound, or you focus on a mantra. Rabbi Arya Kaplan claims that the earliest meditation was davening. And that these were like mantras. That's why we say the same davening over and over again. if it was about thinking, then we would say new davening every day. So we're thinking about something new every day. Why do we do the same thing over and over again? Some of it 3 times a day. The most important part of the davening we say 3 times a day. So we know it's about heart completely. Why are we doing that? So that there's no effort in pronouncing the words. But that comes automatically. That's there. We know it. So where's the effort now? In the feeling. Now we can try and feel the words. And we can try and meditate. We can try and focus all of our being on what those words are and what they mean. The label shalom. So once again, we've got the idea of a complete heart, meaning a heart that has no other distractions. But at the time of davening, there is nothing else that you're feeling. You're only feeling the davening. That's the hardest part. And the davening comes from a place very, very deep down in the heart. Very, very deep down in the heart. The Ma'amran Zal, the Vrayt HaResh Perikin Omdim, as the Gemara says, HaMitpalel Tzarech She'echavein Et Libo L'Shamayim. When one is davening, one has to direct one's heart to heaven. It's got to be a unidirectional heart, a heart that is looking one way, that feels one way, that is completely focused on Shemayim and nothing else. As it says in Tehillim, Tachin Liban, that you've got to prepare your heart. You've got to attune your heart. Your heart has to be tuned in. It's got to be Mechavin Liban L'Shemayim means tune your heart into heaven. Takes a while sometimes to tune your heart in. And as we learn also from the verse about Chana, when she was davening for a child, and Chana was talking from her heart. Talking in her heart, on her heart. It was heart talk. That's what was coming out. From there we see that a person's davening has to be mechaven his heart. And David HaMelech says, I've sought you with all my heart. All of these are not thought processes. All of these emphasize the role of the heart in the process of davening. Now let's explore that a little bit. I want to make clear, in case we don't get there yet this evening, but he does at the end of the chapter, he mentions that in Torah, unlike almost any other practice, the deed is more important than the thought. So, it doesn't help to meditate. That's another, you want to meditate, that's like going to the gym. It's a different thing. That's not in the place of davening. At the end of the day, davening has certain structural requirements, like all the mitzvahs. The mitzvahs require certain deeds. The thought and the emotion energizes the deeds. And determines, those of you who learned the first part with me will remember, the thought that you put into a deed will determine how far that deed can travel in the different spiritual worlds. So if you do a deed with no thought, it goes a certain way. If you put a lot of thought into it, it goes further. If your thought is very pure and very powerful, it goes even further. But if there's no deed, the thought goes nowhere. It's like saying, all the fuel is here, why doesn't the plane take off? And you say, because the fuel isn't in the plane. There isn't a plane. Doesn't help having fuel. And you'll say, but without the fuel, how can the plane go? You're right, without the fuel, the plane can't take off. But without a plane, the fuel is useless. The machshava, thought is the fuel. Thought fuels an action. Thought gives passion to an action. But the action has to be there. So the davening has that structure. The rashachu is mincha, mayus, particular words, in a particular order, as it's laid down in the siddur, as we've had it for all these years. That's the way we daven. And even if that's all we do, that's already a whole lot. So we shouldn't give up and think, oh, my davening is nothing. Even if all you do is say the words, that's already something. Now the question is, what we're looking at is, how can we transform the davening experience into something life-changing? How can we transform the davening experience into something that is really meaningful? And when it comes to davening, you find many people struggle with it a little bit. And many rabbis struggle people to get them to come to davening. But when people get into meditation, they don't struggle. Why not? You don't find meditation masters saying, come to davening, we'll give you a kiddush when you finish meditating. We'll give the children sweets and candies if you come to davening. We'll provide all sorts of services. We'll do all sorts of things. We'll get a chazan choir to entertain you. Just please come. You don't get these meditation masters don't say that. Why? Why don't they have to persuade people to come if davening is meditation? Sorry? Why? What's the difference? I don't know. We know davening is good for us too. It's a satisfying experience. They go away feeling good. That's a bit of a discipline because you don't always feel like it. But you, one thing you know for sure. When you finish the meditation session, you feel different. Your mind is settled. You're focused. You feel different. It's like going to the gym. You know for sure. If you work out well, you'll feel good afterwards. So you know that. The people go. You don't have to have people standing there offering you all sorts of incentives to come. The gyms prefer it if you don't come. They make their money out of the people who don't come to gym. They don't even want you to come. They just want you to buy a membership. But the fact is that people do go. Why do they go? Because they feel good afterwards. Why do people not have a natural craving for davening? Oh, it's minka time again. In the middle of the cricket, they're going to daven minka. Why? Why don't we have a natural craving for davening? Because we don't feel any different afterwards. Come, be honest. How many of us feel different after each time we daven? We don't feel different. So it becomes a routine. It's something you do. That's hard. So frequently, so much of our time just into a routine. What the Nefesh HaChayim is teaching us is how to turn it into a spiritual practice. How to turn it into something that does make us feel different. If we'll start understanding that this is a heart exercise. There has been research done, by the way, to show that people who daven with the minyan regularly suffer less from heart disease than those who don't. Yeah, very, another sense, a very serious study. There are all sorts of interesting studies at the moment now, really, really interesting ones. They just did, not long ago at all, they did a study in two emergency rooms. They had two intensive care rooms. In the one room were people who were being prayed for, and in the other room were people who were not being prayed for. Not Jewish, it wasn't a particular religion. And there was a huge difference in recovery rate. And nobody in the staff knew about the experiment. Nobody in the staff knew what was going on. And the people who were praying were not in the intensive care unit. It was not about visiting and it was not about contact. It was just for some of the churches and the shuls were praying for the people. The others, they were not. They're doing some really interesting research linking the power of prayer to accomplishments, what people actually achieve and what happens with people in their lives. And so to turn this heart work, this is heart exercise. So whether it may manifest in terms of a healthier heart or not, that's one thing, but that's not why we love it. But we should be able to feel the emotional and spiritual benefit immediately after the davening. Immediately. It should make a difference. And we should feel the difference and crave that difference. So how do we do it? The question is, how do we make it? How do we turn a routine into something that's meaningful? Well, like anything worthwhile, it requires an investment, not of time, not of money. It doesn't say b'chol moedecho. There's no money involved in avodah shevelay. In the Ahavta, in the love of Hashem, there's money involved. But in Tfilo, there's no money involved. You can daven, it's free. Even coming into a shul is free in most cases. Daven on your own, there's no cost to davening. But the investment is v'chol levavcho, v'chol nafshecho. You've got to use your whole heart and you've got to use your nefesh. So what's the process? Let's go a little bit further and then we'll discuss it. Well, the Zohar, the Shalach, the next paragraph. And in the Zohar, in Parashat the Shalach, it says, Kol man de matzle tzuluta kame malka kadisha. Any person who davens, who prays before the Holy King, Hashem, bai lemibai biute ulatzale meumka deliva. It's necessary for him to make his requests and to pray to daven may umko deliver from the depths of his heart. Got to access the depths of heart. Begin the yishtekach libe shulim b'kudsha brichu in order so that his heart should be complete with Hashem, v'yechaveim liba ure'uta, and that he can focus his heart and his desires on Hashem. That's how tefillah works. And that's the challenging part, to get umka de liba, to get to the deep places of the heart. How do we get to the deep places of the heart? The methodology is in the next paragraph. Ulechein amru chazal, and that therefore the chazal tell us in the Gemara, shehamit palel tzarich lishot. A person, when he davens, before he davens, has to meditate. Now that word lishot, I'm translating as meditate, because there's no real other way to translate. Lishot really means just to be. You just have to be. You need some time just to be. Doing nothing else, waiting. Kedei shetitchonen da'ato alav, so that his mind settles. V'hainu b'chol levavchem, and that's what b'chol levavchem means. Shetitmalei kol halev, rak b'kavanat tevot atfilo, when the entire heart is filled only with the intention of the words of the davening. Because if you're thinking of anything else while you're davening, then your heart is divided. That's not a lev shalem. A lev shalem means a heart that is filled with only one feeling. If there are two, and never mind if there are 50 different feelings, even if there are just two, that's already a divided heart. That's not davening. That's not the ultimate of davening. So our process has to be, and I think we've got to be kind to ourselves and understand, this is a process. If you want to engage in this, then you start with Shachris tomorrow morning, or if you haven't yet davened Ma'ariv, you start with Ma'ariv tonight, and you start a discipline, and we'll discuss what the discipline is. And you need to accept it's going to take weeks before you start getting into it. You will feel results immediately, but you'll grow into it, and the results will get greater and greater if you stay with it for a while, and so it becomes part of your davening. So what is the process? First thing is amit palel tzorech lishon. This thing of forget it. You know right away. Better than nothing. At least you've davened. You can check it off. Davened today. It will do nothing for you. Absolutely nothing. All it will do is you've checked it off. You've davened. Rush in. Whether it's a Shabbos davening. Sit down, start davening straight away. That's not the process. Sorit lishos. You need time to be before you start davening. Amazing thing. Funny, our structure, we don't, our shuls and our social life and our davening life isn't structured that way. The goyim have it better, kind of. Sometimes you go into the Havdil, you go into one of these churches, and in the middle of the day, what do you find sometimes? We've been in, what do you still find? You walk into one of these churches, in these cathedrals or something, you don't want to walk in, you stand at the door and you peep in, what do you see? You see people sitting. They're not praying, they're not necessarily doing anything, just sitting quietly, just sitting. When do we do that? You know, we're always running, we're always doing. And it's true because our religion is built on mitzvahs. We do things, but there's time to just be. And that's almost the only time. We don't really have another time. Shabbos. Shabbos is a time to be. And we've turned Shabbos into a carnival. But it's not meant to be. Shabbos is not meant to be a social day. Shabbos is meant to be a day of solitude. Family, maybe. But that's about it. The Gemara says that it was with difficulty that they agreed, the Chazal agreed that people can greet each other on Shabbos. Yom Tov is a time for socializing. That's why we can cook on Yom Tov. The very reason part of the not cooking on Shabbos is so that you can't cook on Shabbos, but you can't have people. So that you'll be in solitude of it. I'm not suggesting stop all your social arrangements, because that's the way our lives are structured. But let's get to the soul of what it's meant to be. You see, we find solitude very disturbing. We like noise around us. And in America, it's 100 times worse than here. But it's getting pretty bad here, too. In the States, you'll go into a house with a television in every room on all the time. Because they can't stand silence. They can't live in silence. And when they're walking in the streets, they've got headphones in their ears. Never hear the birds. Always got headphones in their ears. I'm sitting in an aeroplane, headphones, listening to something, watching something. What about this being? Well, this being is quite frightening. Unless one's used to it. If one's used to it, it's the most wonderful thing just to be. But where do we build that time in? That's what meditation is. Meditation is built in time just to be. And there are people who do that every morning. Jewish people, Muslim people, non-Jewish people. There are people who build that time in, and it's not automatically built into davening. Davening doesn't do it, because davening is already a bit of action. So you've got to understand that if you want the davening to be something, you've got to build time in before the davening. And how much time depends on your skill, how quickly you can settle your mind. Those who are good at it can do it in 5 or 10 minutes. There are times when you can do it in a minute or two, when you get very, very good at it. But there are some people who can't, it takes half an hour. For some people, half an hour is too long. They get back into thoughts if they try to do for half an hour. Each person has to find, but do it even for 2 or 3 minutes. For 2 or 3 minutes, just be. And what's the methodology of just being? The method for just being is the same method that meditation uses. So simple. What do you have to do when you're just being? What bodily activities have to continue that you're conscious of? Breathing. The only thing. So breathe. That's being. Just breathe. And what do people tell you when you're about to lose your temper and you're about to make a phone call or you're about to, what do they say? Take a deep breath. Why? What does that do? It stops the thinking. Stops the ego. Anger is ego. Start breathing. You take your ego subsides. And when your ego subsides, you can start feeling. You cannot feel with ego. You cannot love with ego. You cannot feel with ego. You cannot have intuition with ego. And we're used to functioning with ego in almost everything we do, because that's how the world is structured, the Western world. So what is required before davening is a removal out of ego. To get totally rid of ego. Because if I'm prominent in the davening, God's absent. There's no way, the Gemara says God and the Baal Gaiva, God and the egoist can't live in the same house. You want to be an egoist, that's fine, but then God's not around. If you want to hear the Ribbono, if you want to hear God talking to you, and you want to talk to God, ego has to go. And that means the thinking process needs to be suspended so that the deeper thinking process can take place. It's not as if no thinking is taking place, it's intuitive thinking that takes place. That's Bina. Bina Halev. Bina takes place in the heart. There are two different places of thought. There's the mind, which is the analytical kind of left brain thinking process. That's where the ego functions. And there's the heart. We think in our hearts as well. But I mean literally in the heart. When you're thinking in your heart, you feel it in your chest, not in your head. You actually feel the thinking process. Your heart begins to talk to you. You can converse with it. That's what we've got to get to in davening. Umko de libo, to get to the heart. It's got to be in there. It's got to be in your chest is where you daven from, not your head. That's a whole movement that has to take place. An enormous shift of consciousness that has to take place from the mind to the heart in order to daven. That's why one of the worst things to do when one's davening in between is to pick up some Gemara and start learning or something, because then your mind gets back into thinking. It's very hard to get it back into feeling again. One has to just dedicate that time to Avodah Shebelev. This is heart stuff, it's not head stuff. And that's the mitzvah, that's what the mitzvah is. The mitzvah is to do heart stuff at that time. So take a few moments off before davening, build that into your davening time. And spend a few moments just being. Make sure there's no sound, there's no noise. Sit down in the shul or at home, wherever you are, wherever you're diving. Sit down in a quiet place for a few moments. People should know they can't disturb you. Turn your cell phone off, pages off, nothing to disturb you. And just breathe deeply for a few minutes. Just breathe. Deep breath in, out. In,
inhale, just feel the breathing. And then you move into feeling. So you feel the breathing, you start to feel. And you know what you'll begin to find if you do this frequently? You'll start to feel things you've never felt in your life. You'll start to feel things that you haven't felt for 50 years if you're that old. You'll feel things that things will come back, feelings that will come back, that have been dormant. That we just don't feel because we're not feeling. We're operators, we're not feelers. Always operating like machines. We're humans. And humans have hearts as well. And we've got to have time in the day that we work our hearts out. That's when you go and you work up a sweat in the gym, what are you doing? You're working out a heart, a cardio session. Well, in Torah, you also need a cardio session. And that's not while you're studying, it's not while you're learning, it's not while you're listening to a shiur. It's while you're governing is the cardio session, where your heart takes the strain, and you really work from your heart. But you can't do it by saying, okay, now it's going to be hard stuff, let me do hard stuff. Because now you're in thinking. The moment you do that, you're in thinking. So it's a counterintuitive process. It's by removing the thought that the heart starts automatically coming forward. You can't instruct the heart to come forward. The heart doesn't take instruction. The heart rebels against instructions. You can't say, you shall feel, you shall love. It doesn't work. The heart doesn't listen. You must concentrate now. You must focus. It doesn't listen. All you can do is start removing the thought process so that the heart has place to function. The heart is crowded out most of the time. So you need time. Hamispalel tzorich lishhois. There's got to be time for a davener to just be before he davens. And then you take that state of being into your tefillah. You move with that into the tefillah. And if you find yourself thinking again in the middle of the tefillah, stop, you pause, and you take another few breaths. Just focus all your attention on the breathing. Feeling the breathing. Where is the breath? Just feeling the breath moving in. And then move back into the davening. Continue davening. While you're breathing, when you start doing it after a few days, when you're breathing, you'll feel it in your chest, not the breath. You'll feel feeling in your chest. You take that feeling into the davening. And you daven with that feeling. That's what you bring to the davening table. That's the first process that we need to understand in tefillah, the process of creating space for the heart and allowing the heart to function from a deep, deep place. And that depth also comes from being able to feel an intimacy with God at that time. Once you're feeling, then you've got to start feeling God. You feel yourself in the presence of God. You don't think about it. You feel yourself in the presence of God. What's important is, what do you do when your mind starts drifting? See, as I said, you breathe a little bit and you come back. What's really important in this process, also a meditation skill that works very well with davening, chiding yourself and telling yourself off, giving yourself musr, that's ego stuff. To say you're a real bad person, that's ego stuff. It gets you into a thinking process. So if your mind starts drifting and you find suddenly you're not feeling, you're thinking and you're thinking about all sorts of things, if you start saying, ah, there I go again, I'm thinking again, I shouldn't do that, I'm so ridiculous, I can't even concentrate. Now you're in a spiral. You're in a spiral of self-analysis, and you're using left brain, and your davening's over. The technique is very, very simple and very beautiful. Treat your mind and your heart delicately, because it is delicate. Very, very delicately. What would you do if you're trying to train a very delicate child? That's a very, maybe a handicapped child, very delicate child. And you're trying to train the child to do something. And the child does it wrong. What do you do? There you are again. You're going to mess it up again. You failed again. No, that's not what you do. It's just very gently. You steer the child back on track. That's what you've got to do with your mind. When you notice you've gone off track, notice it. Just notice it. One of the interesting things that you start to experience in all of this is
You become aware of your soul because, again, in meditation terms, they speak about you becoming the observer instead of the thing. So it's used for a lot, for example, in pain control. Meditation is used very powerfully at the moment, doing a lot of work in the States. I don't know if they're doing it here too. Controlling pain with cancer patients and others using meditation techniques. And one of the techniques is, as you start noticing the feeling, you start realizing you are not the feeling. There is a part of you that can observe you feeling pain. But that's not you. Because if it was you, you wouldn't be able to observe it. And you start separating the pain from the person. And in this process, the same thing starts to happen. There's a part of you that actually notices. So it's just important to notice. My mind has wandered. Interesting. Mind has wandered. Interesting even to note where it's wandered to. Just notice it. Without a judgment. Without, oh, that's terrible, that's bad. Shouldn't be thinking about such things when I'm davening. What kind of a Jew am I? None of that. Just notice. Interesting. My mind has wandered. I'm thinking about the cricket and I'm supposed to be davening. Interesting. The moment you've observed it calmly, your mind starts shifting back again. And you just gently bring a breathe again, focus on feeling, get your emotion centered in your chest, not in your head, and carry on davening. You just pause, you stop, you notice, then go back, carry on from where you were, gently bring yourself back, do it again. In the beginning you'll find you have to do that about 20 or 30 times during the davening, because our mind wanders. But as you get better at it, less and less. You'll find it doesn't happen. It happens less and less. And now you start to feel at the end of the davening, you felt something. You felt something you've never felt before. And you know what starts to happen? You start looking forward to the next davening. Davening becomes like Shabbos is supposed to be. Like the whole week we look forward to Shabbos, that break when you're just able to be. Davening is like three little mini Shabboses in the middle of the day. Time to insulate yourself and just be with your soul and with God and with nothing else. And even when we daven in a minyan, there's a lot of energy that comes from the fact that everybody's davening. But the important part of tzibur b'tzibur is what? What is the part that has to be said in community? Which part of the davening? The Shmona Esrei. And the Shmona Esrei is the one part we say silently. So it's so interesting. Is it communal or is it individual? It's individual davening together with inside a community. So there's a lot of energy from everybody davening, but it's a personal meditation. It's a very, very individual and personal meditation. So what do we have here in summary? That avoda shebelev, davening is avoda shebelev. That means a cardio workout. Avoda shebelev means a heart workout. Serving God, working for God with your heart. That's the part of your body that is active in davening. That's the part that has to be done. So you don't need the shuckling, you don't need to shake, you don't need to move the rest of your body. The one part of your body that needs to be active is your heart. The problem with the heart is you can't instruct it. It doesn't take instruction. So we've got to find a way to fill our heart just with the meaning of the davening and with our relationship to Hashem and remove everything else from it. That is tirdos hamachshava, what the Chaim Volozhner calls the anxieties and distractions of the thought process, of the very thought process. And how do we rid ourselves of the thought process? Through hamispalel tzarech lishlot. A davener has to give himself time to be before he starts davening. And that fills the mind, the heart comes forward, and you start the davening process. Every time you find yourself drifting, observe. Notice, don't judge, don't scold, don't get guilty. Just observe and notice, and gently pull your focus of attention back again through your breathing, back to the davening, back to the feeling of being in davening. Not a question of I am davening, it's I am in davening. It's interesting, the word mitpalel, davening, mitpalel. Those of you who are good at Hebrew, what grammatical construct is that? It's reflective. What does it mean when I say, where else do we use reflective? Give me some other Hebrew words. Mitlabesh, I dress. I dress myself. What does it mean when I'm mitlabesh? Wrapping clothes around myself. What is mitpalel? I'm wrapping tefillah. I'm in tefillah. I'm davening is something we do in ourselves. It's not we daven. We're in davening. And that's how we need to experience it. I'm going into davening. I'm coming out of davening. Like a trance. Going into a trance. Coming out of a trance. That's what tefillah is. It's a deep emotive experience, a spiritual experience that one has to enter and exit. That's why we take three steps forward, three steps forward when we start to enter the state of davening, and three steps back when we finish to exit. It's actually an entrance and an exit. It's not a thing you do. I have davened. No, have you been in davening today? Were you enveloped in davening this morning? Were you enveloped in davening this afternoon? That's what we have to question ourselves. And that's what we've got to try and achieve through this process. Next week we'll explore the visioning idea of how we, in addition, the second dimension is one of relating to the visions of tefillah and removing other emotions, other feelings, other passions. Today we talked about removing thought. We've got to go further than that. We've also got to remove other destructive feelings. If there are any questions, we've got a few minutes for questions. Yeah. So you don't have to keep up. You don't have to keep up what you. The only part that you really have to try and say with the tzibur is the Shemona Esrei. Now, if you want to leave out pieces before that and say them later, if you've got time, or you want to start earlier. Or whatever you want to do, whatever mechanism you want to do, but the only part that you really need to be with the tzibur is the Shemona Esrei. But for the rest of it, you daven at your pace. And rather, certainly as one's getting into the process, this is a learning process, one has to develop the skills. While this is taking place, while you're doing this, rather select one piece and put all your attention in that one piece until you're good at it and you know it and you understand it, and then you move on to another piece. And either leave out the rest or say the rest quickly. But use at least one piece of the davening, one paragraph, one sentence to really meditate on, to really, really get into the davening and to try and get that sense of umka deliba. Try and get deep, deep, deep into the heart. And if each davening is a continued exercise over and over again, you'll start finding you're getting deeper and deeper into yourself. Not into the words, not into the meaning. Deeper into you. That's what you want to do in life. You want to get deep into you. You want to find places of yourself in davening that you didn't know existed. Not places in the world, not places in the text, not meanings. Places in you that you didn't know existed is what you want to try and uncover in the davening. Okay? And maybe a morning before that is not the idea. It's not bad. Learning a kavrusa before davening is not bad because that's in the fourth part of Nefesh HaChayim, is the fact that in learning, there's a whole lot of the emotive side too. If you're just learning with your head, it's not such a great thing, but in learning, there's a whole lot of the spiritual and emotive side too. As long as after the learning, there's time to be shohet. Have it away, you put your learning away, breathe a bit, relax a little bit, and then go into the davening, that is very powerful. But just not straight from the learning, straight into the davening.
Correct.
Because that's your key, that is your vehicle to understand into loving God. So if you're not connecting with yourself deeply, you've got no avenue to God. So you've got to find parts of yourself that you're loving, that you're in touch with, that you feel. It's an amazing, amazing exercise. Davening is the most amazing gift. It's just such a tragedy that we've got into a routine of treating it very haphazardly. Even when those of us who take it seriously and make sure we daven regularly, and some of us even make sure we're at a minyan regularly, that's great, that's wonderful, but we've allowed it to become a routine. We've allowed one of the most beautiful spiritual practices to become a routine. And we've got to try and reverse that for ourselves. And that's hard, to change a habit, start a new practice, to take things we've been doing all the time and do them radically different is harder than starting to do new things altogether. Right?
Like what, for example?
That's a very beautiful image, that is. Because it is that. We are penetrating deeper and deeper and deeper. I did a series on the Birkot HaShachar, on those brachas that we say in the morning. It was actually a meditational series. It was actually a very interesting series. Unfortunately, only 7 of the 10 were recorded. But they're the 7 most important ones. I'm happy to tell you, we've just, for the help of my son-in-law, finally got a website up where we've got already 400 or 500 of my shiurim, some of my father's shiurim are on it already as well. And there is that there, which is quite, it's just taking the brachas at the beginning of the davening and giving, it's a workshop more than a shiur, it's an actual workshop as to how to use those brachas to enter into a state of being that opens your eyes to a different kind of existence. So that series is called Awakening, because it's the Birkat Hashachar, it's the brachas of the morning, and the first bracha is Hanosein Lasech Vi Bino, to give Bino, and Bino is heart stuff. So that's the beginning of the awakening process. Doesn't mean the beginning of the process of waking up, because before you say those brachas, what have you said already? You said Moed Ani, you might have said Shema already, you've done Negev Asher already, you've said Birkat HaTorah already, you've had a whole day already before you say the first bracha, which is Anosen Asech Bino Lachim, but it gives us the ability to discern between day and night. That Bino is the awakening of the soul, the ability to awaken one's spirit, and the davening, the morning davening, is that process of moving from a stage first of sleep to physical awakeness and then to spiritual awakeness. So that series is called Awakening, and the website is I Awaken. That's in fact where we got the idea from, was after that series. So it's iawaken.org is the website. iawaken.org. And please God, there'll be some interesting stuff. Usually there's an essay on the parasha there. We'll do some interesting things on that website. But meanwhile, if you're interested in the kinds of things we're talking about, the relationship and workshop physical methodology as to how to do it, that particular series of awakening is available on that website. It depends whether your focus is a mental focus or a feeling of the word. So where you want to be is to feel what the word means, not to be analyzing what the word means. And that's a huge shift, because we're used to using words for mental communication. So you've got to treat it like poetry. We'll do some exercises, I'll show you how to do it. Even the Shmona Esra, how to use visioning and imaging rather than to use analysis. So when it says, "V'techazena einenu b'shuk kol tzion," you should be in Yerushalayim with the Ribbono Shel there, and the Shechina present, and the Beit HaMikdash humming, and people around. That you should be there, feel it. That's what it is. It's not, "Oh, Ribbono Shel, may you come and be." No, it's there. You're imaging it, and that's how you make it a reality. If enough people would visualize it and feel it, it would happen. But if we sit there, kind of thinking about it and analyzing it and working the words, that's not what it is. Individuals have to figure that out. For women, sometimes it is. For men, there are technical problems with that because they've got a daven b'tzibur. But one can learn to meditate in the marketplace too. You learn to shut out the other stuff. And you don't shut it out by shutting it out. It's the same kind of thing. The more you try and shut out the clatter, the more you hear it. You do it by displacing it. As your heart, as you're able to focus on those deep places in you, they are so deep that no sound from around gets there. And if that's where you are, it doesn't matter what's going on around you. And a shul has kedusha, a shul has spiritual energy. If everybody there is davening, a shul has a lot of energy that helps the davening process. So if one can, if you can get yourself into that space in a shul, much better. If you can't, you should daven in both places. Don't go home and daven again. Let's say the last question there. There are two things. Some of it we've lost. Some of it they took from the temple service originally. But some of it they got from us, and we've lost. But don't we also, this is more about personal meditation than communal kind of team singing. That doesn't mean that there's no value in communal. But that's not what it's about. That's very nice to sit around and sing mirrors and sing and sing and song. Is very inspirational, and it's one of the vehicles. But that's meant to be a vehicle that gets you into yourself, not that it makes it a song. And unfortunately, very often when we sing, our Shabbos mirrors have become the same. They've become like beer hall ditties rather than emotional, real expressions of the soul. And if you look at some of the old tunes of the Zmirot, they're so soulful. And the new ones are I don't know what they are. They're kind of rap music just about. That's not what it's about. It's about accessing Unkadiliba, the very heart of one, the very source of one heart. So thank you very much. We look forward to continuing next Sunday night.